Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Terms. And many of us, at least sitting around this table, don't believe that's true. But first, we're going to say Happy Memorial Day, or at least recognize Memorial Day, yeah. And thank all those people. I thank Tom Tabak over here for his service, and Mike Cosentino, and all the others that put themselves in harm's way for all those corporate reasons. But here we are. Well, here we are talking about ethics. In media. Hit it, Matt.
Well, one of the things that we do in this class is we talk about the nature of media as that through which we see everything in the world. I think it's easy to forget how much we live through media. We're like goldfish in a bowl. Everything that we see is through water. Well, similarly, everything we see is going to be mediated by someone or some institution. So we try to reflect on what we see and what we think we know about the nature of reality and how
and
much that's mediated.
What we think we know.
Right.
Got it.
Go ahead. I think the thing is, when I was looking at some stuff on the internet about journalism, it said that there are different circles of information. So the circle of stuff we actually see, we're walking down the street and you see a mugging, that's one circle, but that's very rare. That must be, a few percentage of the perception. Most of our perception of what's going on in society and the world is not firsthand.
Exactly.
It's very seldom firsthand. It's either second or third hand.
Exactly. And notice you started off saying that you were on the internet reading this stuff. So that's my first thought is, okay, well, where were you going on the internet to find out about whatever it is you were reading
Society
about?
Society of Professional Journalists is a good source.
Well,
for
the AP used to have a phrase, which they don't use anymore, of course, in 2017. Take your own pictures. In other words, and what it meant was you didn't take another organization's word for what was happening. You sent your people to find out what was happening so you could – it was as close to being there, like you said, like as close to seeing the mugging if you had your people in the war zone, if you had your people at the conference – then and the pictures you get rather than and I don't care if you were the St. Louis Dispatch, the Arizona Republic, or the Arizona Daily Sun, you tried to take as close as you could to take your own picture.
So that's a really good principle, I think. And then when I think that most people have not heard about the necessity to actually get your own people on the ground. You know, when I was at CBS News and I worked in the film and media library, CBS was already closing down its foreign bureaus. They were too expensive. Right. They no longer had somebody living in Cairo reporting on Cairo. Sorry. There's a crisis in Egypt, and they sent a guy there who may or may not, probably does not speak Arabic, and doesn't, you know, he probably has a good education. He arrives. He tries to do his best. That's a very different situation than when they had bureaus everywhere. And those, they were just cutting them back like crazy.
Matt,
so they were losing their own, losing their own eyeballs, Matt.
Matt, tell us about the press release. I mean, where's the ethics? Where's the ethics fall on the press release? You know, in other words, you're taking whatever the source is saying, or the company, or the politician, whatever the source is. Here. I got it right here. Here you go. Here, take this.
Well, the press release is a result of essentially what Steve was talking about of the pulling back of the resources and pulling back of people that are going to Cairo and who could speak the language and people who know the cultures. And so we're losing those kind of tentacles of access to information around the world. And when we cut back those tentacles, then we are reliant on others to produce those press releases that are basically preformed. And this is what's fascinating is how much of our news is actually created by press releases, by firms, by companies that are essentially saying, here's what we want you to say about this issue.
If you look at the local newspaper, it's filled with press releases.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, It filled space because otherwise they would have to hire reporters to go out and report and cover things.
Mm-hmm.
When I was growing up in Oklahoma, there was a Claremore Progress, and it was considered a really good small town newspaper. But my dad said one time, nothing that's really happening in the town is ever going to be in the newspaper. They don't cover, you know, what's really happening. And some of it they shouldn't cover, right? I mean, some of the gossip and some of the stuff. But some of the stuff, it's never clear from what they're doing. So when you're teaching students, and students, and you're teaching mostly, if you say film students, they're going to go out and make documentaries and work for a station. What's the main thing you're trying to get across to them when it comes to issues like this? There's all kinds of the propaganda. There's a world of propaganda. There's more and more news with little quotation marks, more and more information, but more and more of it is manufactured.
Well, so I try to get my students to reflect on what is the nature of reality and what is true and how do we know it. And I try to get them to be thinking about this as they're thinking about crafting messages and stories. You mentioned documentary filmmakers, and that's another fascinating one where so much of a documentary film is really art. It is really actually presenting more than what you are showing as what's true or real. So in other words, what's true and what's real is often much more than just a factual bit of information. It includes a feeling, it includes a sense, it includes emotion, and a documentary will often have to try to capture all of those other senses other than just factual dates or factual occurrence that may have happened in the past. But they're also often trying to evoke something more. And that's what I try to get my students to think about, whether they're going into journalism or going into film, to think about what is real and their relationship to reality as mediators of reality.
So you send people out, it's all your fault. So you send people out, whether they're documentaries,
we finally caught the guy.
Yeah, Paul Horner, you're safe. That was the fake news guy in Phoenix. So you send people out, whether it's film or print or broadcast or whatever, that with some idea that what they choose to cover, where they choose to point their camera, and where they, more importantly, where they choose not to point their camera, communicates a point of view.
Right. Yeah, and so what I want to do is break down the illusion that there is such a thing as objective reporting. Objective reporting is always going to be coming through a subject, and somebody is always going to be determining what to report or what not to report and how to report it. So that's what we need to be very conscious of, is our involvement in that.
There's a difference in the media. I was looking at Donald Trump pushing his way to the front of the line at a recent meeting in Europe. He you could watch him shove the guy, I think he's the president or prime minister of Montenegro. You could see the guy's surprise. He just grabbed him and pushed him aside and pushed him up, and then he straightened himself up. The nonverbal communication of that, it tells you something about the man that when you read, and I'm talking about the left wing or even just mainstream media, verbal descriptions of he may have shoved the guy to come to his place, that doesn't give you any idea what the thing actually looked like.
Right. Yeah, the nonverbal communication is really essential, and that's one thing I really like to try to emphasize. And that's what's really prevalent in social media right now. When you look at memes that people share, there's something going on there that's more than the actual text, and it's a combination usually of an image with a text, and they're trying to get at something more than just a linguistic written word.
Talk more about that, don't you think, Mike? That's something we need to try to understand.
It's really, frankly, I think it's very fascinating. We've already seen this occurring, for instance, in places like in China, where there's tremendous suppression of the media. And we've actually seen where people have found ways to kind of bypass the censors by using puns, by using double meanings, double entendres, and using images to try to bypass the censorship mechanisms that are able to kind of flag and catch words that are problematic. problematic words that that the government wants to control.
The George Lakoff syndrome, you know, the sociology linguist that is still around, by the way. I remember studying George Lakoff when I went to school, for God's sake. But who knew he was probably 12 years old but at the time. But the idea is that the media you're getting, the phrases that you're getting, the pictures that you're getting are chosen very carefully. And with the full knowledge of how it's going to bias you and how it's going, what slant it's going to put on, whether it's, and he's obviously, he keeps telling the left, you're screwing up. You're not using the right. The right has got this figured out. They've been used, they convinced people that Hillary was a crook because they've been saying it for 30 years and you haven't been saying anything, you know.
The old euphemism that was used by the mainstream press and stuff was he's in high spirits. So if you had a congressman who was drunk on his butt, you know, they would say he's in high spirits. And if you knew the rules, you knew the secret rules, you knew that when they said somebody was in high spirits, they were seriously impaired. And you know, Senator X said, you know, and he was in high spirits. That was one of the old euphemisms kind of under, you know, either knew what they were talking about, you got the message, or you did just think, oh, he was in good spirits, huh? He was a happy guy.
That's what I'm talking about, is that there's code that's going on.
Exactly.
And you see that in social media memes. You see it in cable news broadcasts as well.
Give us some examples.
Well, you know, on cable, pay attention to how much in a news or what is ostensibly a news report. Some of the what we treat as news outlets are actually entertainment channels. And so you need to acknowledge that often our news is given to us as a form of entertainment. Just pay attention to the screen. Pay attention to all of the different images that are on a screen, in the way things are juxtaposed, in the way that there's usually a ticker at the bottom, and all of the different messages that are actually coming through. There's more than just whoever is speaking at any one time. There's a lot going on that screen. It could be, for example, words that say alert or breaking news. It puts you in a kind of heightened sense of something important is going on, and it actually affects your perception of the message. If you've got multiple heads on the screen, and each of them is essentially kind of transmitting a message, whether they approve or they disapprove, they will be reacting in nonverbal ways, and we're picking up on these and we're decoding these things. But there's on social media, in particular, if you go onto something like Twitter or you go onto other media like now 4chan and 8chan, are kind of, you're digging deeper down into these kinds of countercultural types of media, where you're actually finding much more coded language. But also, when you're getting down into those types of media, you're also getting into the more problematic, more ethically problematic issues, such as racism and sexism.
Can you give us an example or some examples from the I know that's difficult to recall on the spot, but what you're talking about. So you're looking at this thing, and what are the kind of coded messages that are put in there? And they're put in there because people don't want to say that, that don't want to admit that they're racist. Mm-hmm. They have a euphemism.
Right. So a lot of what's used in these channels is indirect language and indirect speech that is easily disavowed as a joke. And probably one of the most popular or most well-known images that came out in the last year was the Pepe the Frog meme. And this was something that was kind of picked up by people in social media, in these channels, to try to kind of give a wink to say, aha, you know, I'm not really totally serious about what I'm saying, but the question is, what am I serious about? So they may be saying something that's really horrible and racist and sexist, and they can kind of disavow it because it comes along with this joke.
Right.
But the question is there something actually serious that they really are saying? And I think that's kind of the issue when we talk about news and talk about information. That means that we have something serious to say. If you want to have free speech to be able to say something, that means that it's important to say. But what's often done is it's often then used in these kinds of memes to try to disavow it at the same time, so that you are able to say, well, I wasn't really being serious about that.
Well, that's one of the things that you see is the and this is they cover this sort of thing on some of the we were talking about Veep before we went on the air. There's a HBO series called Veep. And some people think, and there's several of them, It reflects current relationship between politics and media in a pretty good way. But the idea is that they're sitting in the government office, the president or vice president, whatever, senators, and they're watching the news and they're saying that's a lie. But by noon, that lie has been repeated because the memes have gone out on Facebook and on other social media to back up the lie. And there's people occurring simultaneously. Surrogates are occurring on radio and on television. And, this video was released today on YouTube that backs up the lie. So he's saying something simple. I slept with the vice president. It's by noon that day, you've had 16 sources, and you had the army of Paul Horners or Russians or whoever you choose to think is doing it that have backed up the lie. And so you try to go out there, and you're Reuters or the Associated Press, and you've gone to the source, and you said, I didn't sleep with the vice, anyway, that's the situation we find ourselves in. And what we have are more and more people walk away. So your job, Matt, should you choose to accept it. And this is like Mission Impossible. And I'm the reference here is chosen on purpose. Your job is to convince your students that they can, that through film, through documentary, through print, that they can tell the truth.
Right? So when I was at CBS in my lowly job, they worshipped Edward R. Murrow. There were plaques of him all around. Walter Cronkite was finishing up his career. I don't know if he was there full time still, but he wouldn't talk to anybody. He wouldn't sign any autographs because he didn't believe in being a media star. He was a reporter. He thought of himself as an old fashioned reporter. So you had an organization, whether it was part hypocritical or not, who really believed that they had stood up for the truth and were about the truth, and they had a reputation for telling the truth, for doing more investigative work, for having more sources than anybody else. And we moved from people who had an ideal standard visualized for them about what they were supposed to do to the current world that Mike was talking about.
Yeah, I was just thinking of, you're trying to think of who it is that I've always respected. I always liked Jim Lehrer from the NewsHour, and he always said that the news should be boring. It shouldn't be captivating. It is just dry information. But that's when you're getting closer to a degree of objectivity.
So-and-so said this, did this, end of story.
Right. But that seems to be gone. Now everything is sensationalized, and everyone is in competition to get to attract the eyes.
Well, there were huge fights at CBS between the entertainment division and the news division. Huge struggles, bureaucratic struggles behind the scenes.
And this
before
is
and after,
the 70s,
I was there a very
this,
short time.
This isn't new, but
no, yeah. But there were huge battles between entertainment and the news trying to remain independent. At the same time, it was no longer generating the amount of money that entertainment was,
It
was losing out.
Never did. And that was the demand. Is that news carry its own way? And that's how they justified it. And that's also how they justified putting their own bias on it. The station owner, the media owner got to spin it any way he wanted to because that division doesn't make money anyway. My biggest complaint here is the media star. And NPR, if you're listening, you are as guilty of this as anyone that somehow, and once again, the Associated Press, not that they are necessarily the gold standard here, but if any of their reporters becomes the story, so they're automatically removed. They're gone. They are sent to BFE to cover the kayak races in on the Danube or whatever.
The coach is never supposed to become the story about the team.
Hello, Joe Arpaio, where the sheriff was always the story. But this is what translates in news for ratings, I imagine, and for profit, that there has to be this mystique built up. But what you were just talking about, Steve, where the star, the media star, the broadcast, the Edward R. Murrows, were stars because they had more sources, because they had more truth, because they had more access to real, direct stories. Not for the reason they're stars today, which is because they have an entertaining voice or they...
Beautiful to look at.
They don't wear the yellow. You know,
I wonder, you know, I listen to occasionally to local television. I wonder if they even went to journalism school. There's, you know, they're such beautiful people and they're so well spoken. But you wonder, you know, I mean, the old guys were not that, you know, Walter Cronkite looked okay, you know, but he was not, you know, Edward R. Murrow, you know, was pretty, you know, pretty rough looking guy.
The American Academy of Dramatic Art is much more useful than journalism school anywhere, than Columbia School of Journalism.
So when you're talking to young people, you have, we've moved from a world where there were some media giants who had standards and a lot of others that didn't, to an absolute chaos of information, Matt. So how do you, if you're a young person, or in fact as old guys like us, how do you negotiate to the truth? Well, let me ask you that. You're a philosopher. Why is the truth important in journalism and media?
Well, there are a couple of different questions there, but I want to get to the point that you made about the students. How do we help them navigate the so many different voices that are out there? The danger is that it's an appeal to authorities, that we're looking for the person that we respect who's always got the right information. But there is a sense in which we have to find the people that we respect, find the people that we trust. And often the way that we do that is we first go through our families and our local communities and our schools. We trust that our educators are giving us good information, and we have to go from there. And ultimately, we are all on our own. We have to evaluate whether the institutions of media that we're getting our information from, whether it's those are all good institutions, and we should constantly be evaluating them. But often, we have to work with a sense of trust that others that we know have been able to find good information through those sources. But of course, this is what's always being exploited as well. So we've got to really kind of watch out for whether our sources are also being subverted by economic forces, are primarily driven now by entertainment. We have to really question whether our sources are as good as they used to be. I think we always have to be on the lookout for new sources that are able to challenge kind of the old authorities.
Well, that's it. And I want to switch on jump on the other side for a minute here. That especially in small town, you related your small town experience. That you can, you know, of course, from my standpoint, every journalist is striving to be ethical. Well, you know, that's not necessarily true. The idea is it ethical? And your dad said nothing in a small town that really matters ever gets reported. So local reporters go for the piece on the smart student that's going to go to Harvard, or the teacher that's doing some innovative thing in the classroom because people like reading about, or the pet that can do tricks or whatever. But he doesn't talk about the deal that the mayor made with the incoming hotel. The story I always tell, I worked for the Sedona Times in the 80s. There was a magazine, a newspaper called the Sedona Times. Short story. They did one story. They did a series negative to real estate. Out of business in 8 months. Out of business in 8 months, I walked in as a reporter for the Verde Independent and bought their entire stock for $9,000. I mean, every piece of furniture, every computer that they left. I mean, their ad revenue fell off so fast, and all they did was a few what they considered ethical journalism stories on real estate. Now, I read those stories. Were they they were a little sensational. These guys came out of wherever they came out of, and they said, hey, well, there's something a little fishy here. And so but they did what journalists often do, is they put a twist on it to make it a little more sensational. They gave it a sensational headline. Was it a story worthy of doing? Yeah, on page 19, not on page 1.
Well, that's a question, you know, in some way for Matt, for what's truth? Because everybody has their own point of view. And when you read the journalistic ethic guys, they say things like, be transparent. You know what your biases are. And be aware of your biases. And I guess I didn't read it, but they say, you know, compensate for them or understand what your biases are. They have an example of a guy, I guess a famous reporter, and what he did is he wrote a headline for the story before he went and did the investigation. And then he went and did the investigation, and he looked at the headline he would write now. And if he wrote exactly the same headline before he went and investigated the story as he did when he had done it, he realized he hadn't learned anything.
That's a good technique. I like that.
Tomorrow morning, you walk into, or this afternoon, you walk into your class. You got a guy in your small town or medium town newspaper, and he spread a lot of money around. He's donated hundreds of thousands to the local Boys and Girls Club or the local YMCA. He's got a women's shelter named after him. And on and on, they set up a homeless veterans shelter, whatever. He's doing a lot of good in the community, but he's also a shady, or at least not an ethical, and we're going to go back to a commercial real estate developer. He builds crappy buildings and charges a lot of money. Or whatever, he makes deals. So what story do you do? Do you do the puff pieces? The guy's doing all this other stuff, but he's also screwing people.
Well, this is one of those things where I think that it takes sometimes a subtle and nuanced use of language and words to try to convey something like this. And this is what's very dangerous because, as you mentioned earlier, you might convey something that's very sensationalist, or you may actually convey the reality. And are you able to convey reality in a way that is not as blatantly obvious? You're able to kind of maybe show the story, show the picture, instead of saying this person is corrupt, they're doing shady things,
right?
Allow the audience to read between the lines. And like I said, this can be done effectively and truthfully and honestly, or it can be done dishonestly. That's really the danger.
Okay, so let's go back to my question, Matt, which is for a philosopher, this sort, why should we care about truth in the media and reporting? Why is the truth important? Why not just make up stuff that makes us feel good? I mean, we have a president who just makes up stuff to make himself look good. And he does it over and over again, constantly. I begin to wonder whether he has any concept of truth. That's my personal opinion. That's my editorial part. But the deeper question, it really doesn't have anything to do with one person, is why is it important that we have a truthful media? What happens if we don't?
Well, I think the fact is that reality does matter. I think that I can use an analogy that may not seem appropriate, but I think it is. If you go to your mechanic and you have a problem with your car there's something that's wrong with it, that is true, that is wrong with it, and that there is a part that can repair this, and we want to repair that part. And if you don't repair that part, the car is going to come back and you're going to continue to have problems. In the news, we're talking about real-world things. We are talking about things that really do have an impact on us. We're talking about medicine. We're talking about vaccines. We're talking about science and technology. We're talking about the ability to land on the moon, which is called into question by some people, right? But it is something that we have accomplished, and that you can either do this or you can't do it with our science and with our technology. But ultimately, that's going to come back to us if we are deceptive and dishonest about whether we landed on the moon or if the part that I replaced in your car is the correct part to replace. Science and technology and reality are going to prevail at some point. And the issue is whether we have contact with that reality. And that's what the news media is trying to give us. And in many cases, though, we're often being distracted from what is real and what is true. For example, we're often involved in very petty disagreements as if that's what's important in the news. Meanwhile, we're unaware of genocide and war that's going on in other places. So we're getting distracted from that reality. But that reality will come back and bite us at some point.
Perfect example. You can do this down to our level here. Ann Kirkpatrick was a Democratic. I mean, she voted, she believed that health care should be extended, and yet she carried a gun. So you had certainly liberals in Sedona that were so anti-gun. The fact that she's providing health care for millions and her vote is providing health care for millions and millions of people that don't have it, and yet they couldn't see beyond the fact that she was a Second Amendment supporter. And it was insanity. And we have this kind of thing, at least on the left, we have this going on all the time. I'm sure they do on the right. I just don't care what the, you know, about their conundrums.
Well, but that's the whole Tea Party movement and the whole primarying anybody who is sort of a moderate Republican. That was what that was about, was to just force it. And in fact, it's a governor of what is happening in Washington among Republicans. They still can be primary. And we've talked about this many times, but the number of people who vote in a primary, and Mike used to have really good statistics on this, is really tiny. So, you know, you have a Republican primary, you have 22% of the Republicans voting or whatever it is. You end up with pretty extreme people. Democrats, that doesn't happen here in Arizona because they're a minority party. But, okay, so, but what I'm thinking, Matt, is that if I go to get my motorcycle repaired, and they don't really repair it, they tell me they repaired it, it's not really repaired, I find out pretty quickly, right? You know, it's like if you're in Athens. Athens decides to go to war with somebody bigger and meaner. The next thing they do, they overrun the city. They enslave all the men, rape all the women, and it's done, right? It's an immediate response. The complexity, we don't get any kind of the truth in media and the news doesn't happen like that. We don't get that immediate feedback. Hey, my motorcycle still don't work.
I do want to mention that there is an ethical way to wage war. Obviously, I hope you never become a general. But to answer his question, that you know, as what he said, that the because of the layers, because of the lies, because of the support, as I said, the echo chamber, as other people have called it, the intentional obfuscation. They don't want the truth to be known, and they're very good at hiding it.
Paul Varilla wrote a book back in the 1990s predicting what he called an information bomb. And you can think of this in two different ways. It has two different senses. It's an explosion of information, but it's also information used as warfare. And I think that's really kind of where we're in the middle of right now.
Full warfare is what we're seeing.
I need to read that.
It's the thing is that the results are so diffuse and so indirect and take so much time. So if we damage our relationships with the European, our European allies, the actual kickback of that to anybody's personal life here is very, very long in coming or very, very indirect compared to, you know, in the ancient world, things were fairly simple. You got in the wrong war, you know, that was that.
Well, it's more,
now it's you can make a lot of mistakes and we're still kicking.
What I hear both you guys alluding to is, and what I find so damaging is the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Huffington Post, Conservative Daily, and you can choose your side. You have organizations that believe they have people in the field and they are reporting in a Jim Lehrer fashion what happened, the truth. This is what he said. This is what she did. But here's the context, which is also important, around what he said and she did. And yet, we have a huge amount of population that won't believe it because they've been told not to. There's another huge media meme source out there saying the New York Times is a left-wing rag. You got the president condemning all sorts of... And when you poison the well, which has got to be a topic of conversation, when you say everything in this box, everything in this well is bad.
All politicians are crooked.
Well, not only that, all our elections are rigged.
Then you can't distinguish the levels of honesty.
If all our elections are rigged, then what are we doing?
If my vote doesn't count, it doesn't matter if I vote. What about context in terms of reporting in the media? Because you could have the same story that Mike's talking about, X did Y did Z, you know, whatever the thing is, and the context could turn it into completely different realities. There's an honest and truthful context, and then there are dishonest ones, right? I mean, it's the same, functions the same way as the factual part of the news. So we have facts, folks. We have simple facts, and then we have the context of those facts. And if you report just the facts without the context, what do you lose?
Well, I just want to emphasize that on the one hand, we've got the responsibility of those that are producing media and producing the news, but we also have the responsibility as consumers as well, and we've got to take that responsibility to be critical of that context that's being given to us. And I think it really is important to be looking at multiple media outlets, be curious about whether what you are hearing is factual and accurate or if it's being misrepresented in some way, and so seek out the other media outlets to see and compare how different people are reporting on the same event. So I think that there's a consumer responsibility here as well, that we've got to be informed and curious to learn more about what we claim to know. And so anytime anyone stands up and says something like, oh, the elections are rigged or the politicians are all crooked, we are making a claim of knowledge that we are pretty certain about. And so we need to be critical about how certain am I about that. Do I really know that?
What is emotional truth to me? I mean, I don't like politics, say, and so I don't want to get involved in it. So I think all politicians are crooks. Part of it's emotional. It's not a really factual observation of different politicians. It's a kind of emotional dismissal of having to think about things, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's an element I think in all the stuff that we do, when you're good guys or bad guys or left guys or right guys. I mean, that's an undercurrent in our lives as part of being people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've noted, I believe, on the show before, at least in my case, even as old as I am, 75% to 90% of my information comes through my Facebook news feed. And now I've selected and I've honed, as everyone has, I assume anyway, maybe not everyone, I've selected that news feed. I know what's coming. At least I know the sources. I look at the bottom and I see what's coming. Now, don't get me wrong. Facebook's algorithms and things select an awful lot of things for many of us. And people pay. You know, there's the little word sponsored on there. And this is Facebook. But, you know, Facebook is, what, 1.7 billion users. I mean, we've never, you know, at its best, your CBS thing, you know, maybe at...
Yeah, tiny. And the amount of hard news in the world of Facebook, the percentage that's actually news in Facebook must be 2% of the entire content of it. Same way with Twitter, 2%. And the part that's actually true in that 2% is probably 0.5%.
And that's what our guest is talking about as far as when. So I want to be clear. What he's talking about, you have to be selective. You have to go to multiple sources. This is part of it, folks. You know, I may be getting multiple sources on my news feed, but they're all echoing the same, biased source.
Well, you can find people who tell the truth, just like we do as individuals. We all know people who you can't really trust what they say. I mean, as individuals, they're friends. We maybe get along with them, but you can't really trust. And there are other people that you learn that they're good as their word.
But
and that they're
people,
accurate about what they say.
That was Bill O'Reilly. I mean, he was so good at what he did, you know, how he could do it, whether it's emotional, like you said. Alex Jones, to some people, are, you know, we think they're crazy and need to be, you know, Rush Limbaugh. For some people, I remember the quote-unquote Rush rooms of the 90s where people would go and sit in a room and listen to this anger and hate and diatribe. And biased.
I work with people who were raised on Rush Limbaugh, and the family sat around and listened to Rush.
But they thought it was the truth.
But
the light.
All right.
Well, yeah.
Talk to us about, you know, I mean, there's opinion, there's truth, there's all these. I think people, and I think what Mike's saying is that people are following, Matt, their emotional needs and desires rather than. And they don't want to let facts and truth get in the way. What can you say about that?
Well, we all, every one of us, thinks that we know what is true and what is right. No one goes around thinking that what they're thinking is false. Everyone believes that what they think is true. But we all also have to question how we know that. And I often catch myself talking about something where I say, oh, I read something, you know, happened. And I realize, you know, I didn't actually read that article. I just read the headline. And can I really say that I know that that was something that happened in the world? Because I know how deceptive and misleading headlines are. But I often catch myself repeating something that I simply read in a headline, but I did not read the actual argument, the actual article of. And so that's what we all have to do, is we all have to say, how certain am I about what I'm claiming to know right now? And I think that the thing I want to emphasize is so much of our information is mediated by others that it is very hard for us to really say that we have a firm grasp on what's real.
It is very hard. Who's going to radicalize you? Is Howard Zinn? You know, when I read about the Civil War through Howard Zinn's eyes, and a lot of history through the common people, not through the corporation or whoever was, you know, we got in our old regular old history books, our Houghton Mifflins and whatnot. But, you know, that you could buy your way out of the Civil War if you had enough money. If you had $500, you'd send some other guy, white or black, to fight for you. And so on. So some of us got radicalized by Howard Zinn, or did you get radicalized by Bill O'Reilly, where government or Ronald Reagan for that matter, government is the problem, and so all of a sudden we have a generations of government haters. You know, we have said before, you got households that are getting five government checks, and I don't care whether they work for NAU. And is a quasi government check, and yet not hating, literally hating the government and wanting it to go away, and it's just this sort of insane mix.
Like I worked with guys who had no vacation, you know, no sick leave, no pensions, no nothing, and they hated the government for oppressing them. So what we're kind of getting at, I think, and I don't want to talk for Mike, but what we're getting at is there's this emotional-driven thing that people believe is truth, and they don't want the nuggets of actual facts and a broader perspective to get in the way.
Right. All of our news media now is bordering on entertainment. I call it infotainment. And, you know, pay attention to how much you are reading news essentially to kill the time or to relax. The distinction between entertainment and information has largely been blurred. And news media is trying to capture our attention and capture our attention away from those things that do just distract us. So it's more increasingly difficult for us to decipher those.
Yes, and that infotainment term certainly has been around for a while, but it is no less true today than it was in my day, and when it started, when they started going that way,
it's gotten magnified. I think, so, Mike. In other words, it's gotten more, that aspect has built up and gotten more.
So
powerful.
What's ethical? What's ethical?
Well, we've got 1 minute left, Mike, we need to do this again sometime and talk some more, because it's a little a bit of a stretch for us on Democratic Perspective to bring in a philosopher to talk about truth and justice.
When I remember reading, spending an entire course reading 47 pages of philosophy. Who does that? Well, philosophy people do. We want to say, before we run out of time, we want to thank Steve Segner and all those fine people over at El Portal for their support of Democratic Perspective. We want to thank the people at Democrats of the Red Rocks for their great and continued support of our show, Democratic Perspective. We want to remind everyone that the door breakfasts are fascinating and getting very well attended, speaking of involvement. There's a political speaker usually every month. You can find this show and all our shows on bbid.org. We have an archive of our 45-minute shows and our 30-minute shows and our 15-minute shows, all on bbid.org.
And And we'll be rebroadcast this Sunday at 12:15 if you want to listen to parts of the show again, or if there's something that...
Saturday, 12:15.
No, you can also contact us. Is there something that you want to know that we didn't get to? You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news and our Saturday replay after the noon news right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.